Jack McLennan was 27, fit and visibly strong.
He was trained well. He knew how to hit and I was gobsmacked.
He seemed ready for anything, but then he suddenly vanished.
I was just talking to him last night. Like, how the hell does that happen?
I'm Rob Bergen. Join me as I investigate what became of Jack in the new season of Unravel.
There has to be something more nefarious going on.
Search for the Unravel podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
With that smoke coming in and the explosions of my neighbor's house, cars being set alight, my kids came to me and said, "Daddy, are we okay here?"
From Wandjeri Country, I'm Lixitum Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, we're going to take you back to Belfast to hear from the city's migrant community as violent anti-immigration protests force residents to question their safety at home. You'll hear that interview shortly. Then, there is more big news out of the UK because Keir Starmer's defence minister has called it quits, rather awkwardly, right before he was about to tour an English AUKUS facility with our defence minister, Richard Marles.
It's interesting because, I mean, as you say, Richard Marles, your defence minister, was, I think he did actually meet John Healey this morning before John Healey resigned. I think there were photos of them out jogging or something. I mean, by the end of the day, he's got a different defence secretary to talk to.
All of that coming up from the Radio National Breakfast Team on The Breakfast Wrap. So we've been covering this story right throughout the week. The 2 days of violent protests in Belfast in the wake of a pretty horrific stabbing attack allegedly carried out by a Sudanese asylum seeker who's since been charged and has been remanded in custody. The video footage from this attack is brutal. It's been commented on by the police and politicians, the local community, all expressing outrage. But what has happened in the city since has left migrant communities in Northern Ireland shaken and fearful. Multiple houses and vehicles have been set alight, families, businesses, police harassed and attacked. Yesterday we heard from the former Deputy Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly, Jane Morris. Here's what she told Sally.
This horrific things we're witnessing is just shocking. The ethnic minorities are being scapegoated and it's not them to blame. I'm sorry to sound so both frustrated, annoyed, but I'm also terribly, terribly sad. I mean, I thought this was behind us.
Brave members of Belfast's migrant community have also spoken to the press, including this Ugandan nursing student. She told the UK's ITV that she was forced to flee her home as a result of the violence.
I only got 3 things from the house, and the only thing I did not get from the house were the letters my children wrote for me, because that is all I have from my children. The letters that they wrote for me 3 years back when I was leaving them back home. I think that is the only thing I didn't get. I only got my passport, my laptop, and my uniform because I have to go to work.
And Selma Shima moved to Northern Ireland from the Democratic Republic of Congo in 2013. And for more than a decade, he has lived in the area where houses were burnt down by protesters. Our producer, Gray Stranger, was able to get him on the program. And right before Sally Sara recorded the interview with him, I could actually hear them chatting about life in the DRC. Sally had visited there years ago as a journalist. He'd lived there for a long time. But after living in Britain for more than a decade and gaining citizenship, he told Sally that he now calls the UK home, a home that he refuses to leave. Here is Anselma Shima's interview with Sally Sara.
Anselma, what's the situation been like for you, for your family and your community over the past few days with this violence in Belfast?
Actually, it has been a very difficult moment having this experience in the last 2 days. I myself condemn what took place in our street on night of Monday night. It was brutal, unacceptable, and I call for the justice to take place. And my prayers and my thought are with the family of the victim, and we pray for the victim for a quick recovery. Mm. But the reaction, the violence is completely wrong, unacceptable.
Has it been frightening for members of your community, Anselme?
Not only frightening, but scary and horrific. Because myself, it was that Tuesday evening. I was coming back from my son's football training. And 10 minutes after, the smoke erupted in my house because the windows were still open. Mm. And my son, I remember, asking me, "Daddy, where is this smoke coming from?" I'm married and I have three children. My firstborn is very asking so many questions. Mm. He's 9. And he's very curious, asking any question that crosses his mind, and I have to give him an answer. So he came and asked me, "Daddy, where is this smoke coming from?" I said, "I don't know. Let's just close the window to protect ourselves from the smoke." Mm. And then the minute later, it was the fire alarm of the building next to my house that went on. And my fire alarm went on as well because of the smoke that went in. So my son started to say, "Daddy, is the fire alarm on? So we need to evacuate the house. Look, even the next building, the alarm is on, so people need to evacuate." I said, "No, it's just the smoke. It will go away," because I knew what was going on outside. After the explosion of my neighbor's house and the bus which was taking fire on my road, it was, I live 50 meters away from the bus that was set alight. Mm. So with that smoke coming in and the explosions of my neighbor's house, cars being set alight, my kids came to me and said, "Daddy, are we okay here?" My son, I remember, he said, "Daddy, I'm scared." I didn't know how to formulate the sentence to tell him whatever was going on. So I pretend as if I don't know. "Let's find out together." So I put the TV on so they can see by themselves and see what is going on. And then whenever I put the TV on, my son said, "Oh, Daddy, that is our street." "Yes." "Oh, Daddy, look, the building. Is that building which is behind us?" "Yes." "Oh, Daddy, look, that is our house." "Yes." So that is how I said, "Okay, so that is what is happening, and that is the place where the smoke is coming from." I told them the best thing to do now is to go to bed. So I sent them to bed, but they couldn't sleep because of the noise. People were passing by on our door with face covered, couldn't tell who is that, passing by up and down as we live on our road, which is the busiest street on the area. We couldn't sleep. My son came back to my room. I take him back. So I said, "Okay, let's pray for God's protection to see if we'll be able to wake up tomorrow morning." We had a sleepless night. It was a very, very scary moment, even for myself as well as for my children.
How have you tried to explain to your children the sentiments, what has been happening, particularly around racial anger in Belfast and political anger?
My children are still too young. He's 9 years old. That will be too much information to give to him. And I'm doing my best to protect him from not being able to understand the racism which is taking place on our street, because I'll destroy his education. I'll put something bad inside of him. And my battle today is to see, this is my home. This is my country. So even if I can't have the fruit of my work today, I can prepare where the children will have their future tomorrow. So today, the battle we are fighting, what we are facing today, what can we do to prevent the children when they grow up to live the same thing?
What do you say to people when you're hearing those racist remarks, people telling you to go home, go back to where you come from?
For me, I think is mentality set, which is not right. I am a British citizen. this is my country, and I will fight for the benefit of my country. I have no other nationality. If you send me back to Congo, I'll need to apply for the visa to go to Congo because I'm not Congolese anymore. So where are you sending me? With my British passport. So if you try to understand things, I understand people being angry. Myself, I am. I understand people to protest, but we can do a peaceful protest. And myself, I would join that protest against the brutality on our street because I need my children to grow up in a peaceful community the way I have been living. I've been living in my house here for almost 10 years with good relationship with my neighbors. And that is what I may want for my children to continue to live with. So I would fight for the peace of our local community.
Anselme, one day when your son is much older, what will you tell him about what has happened in the past few days?
I may prefer him to discover by himself the brutality that we are facing, the racism that we are facing in our local community when he grows up, than whenever he's growing up, myself going to put bad memories in him. I try to build peace, as Jesus said, blessed are those who are the peace builders, because they'll be called the children of God. Showing them that the school is there, you can go to school like everyone else. Show the good side of the thing and try to build peace in the next generation than to keep giving bad memories to the next generation, and they will never have peace in our local community.
The most extraordinary message there from Belfast local Anselme Shima, a former Congolese migrant, now a British citizen, who's been dealing with days of anti-immigrant violence on the streets of Northern Ireland. Well, the breakfast wrap really should be called the British wrap today, because we're going to spend the rest of the program covering the chaos in Westminster. We're able to lock in pretty strong interviews detailing just what is going on and the reaction to it as well. Also, what it means for Australia. We're talking about the resignation of two government ministers, taking the total tally to depart Keir Starmer's government to 7. But these departures are different, because these two ministers have left on principle over the funding of the armed forces. Both the British Defence Secretary, John Healey, and his junior secretary, Al Khan, have resigned, saying the government's new plan to fund defence falls far short of what is needed. The reason it's also big news in Australia is because this all unfolded just hours before John Healey was due to tour an AUKUS facility in England with his Australian counterpart, Defence Minister Richard Marles. Now, you're about to hear from a former Conservative Party Veterans Affairs Minister, but before that, the Independent's chief political commentator, John Rentall.
It's all happening. Since your programme started, we've had an appointment of a new Secretary of State for Defence. Dan Jarvis has been appointed to replace John Healey.
These are incredible events. It's one way to get out of a meeting with the Australian Defence Minister. It's quite extraordinary. Tell me about the comments that we've had from John Healey. There had been some tension there, but now he's quit his post because he thinks the UK government just isn't reaching adequate spending levels on defence.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. There's been an argument going on behind the scenes, increasingly edging into the public domain over the past few months about defence spending. We've been waiting for this thing called the Defence Investment Plan, which has not been published yet, and the wrangling over it has become very, very tense, and so tense, obviously, that John Healey, who says he only saw the final numbers in that document on Monday, decided it wasn't something he could live with, and so he resigned from the government.
How has Sir Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister, how has he responded to this resignation and also the resignation of the Armed Forces Under-Secretary Al Cairns?
Well, he hasn't responded to Al Khan's yet, but he has. I mean, after many, many hours, he did write a letter to John Healey, the former defence secretary, and said rather sort of crisply that he disagreed with him. But, I mean, it's a very fundamental disagreement between the two. And I think Keir Starmer's position is very, very hard to defend. I mean, he said he wanted defence spending to be lifted to 3% of national income by the end of the decade. This document, which hasn't yet been published, is supposed to set out how that was to be achieved. But John Healey has revealed that they're not going to hit 3% by 2030. It's going to be something like 2.68%. And that's just not enough for John Healey. And it's not what Keir Starmer said he was going to do. So I think the Prime Minister is in very deep trouble.
What does it mean for AUKUS? Our fortunes are tied to yours in many ways, and when it comes to defence.
Well, I think it means, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, as you say, Richard Miles, your defence minister, was, I think he did actually meet John Healey this morning before John Healey resigned. I think there were photos of them out jogging or something. Yes, I mean, by the end of the day, he's got a different defence secretary to talk to. But I think the bottom line from your point of view is that the UK is likely to be spending more on defence over the next 4 years than it would have done otherwise. I think John Healey has done the nation a service in that respect, because whoever is Prime Minister and whoever is Chancellor of the Exchequer is going to have to find some more money.
And that is the Independent's chief political commentator, John Rendell, there. So as this developed throughout the morning, our team was racing to find ways to cover this. And our EP, Eleni Soltis, landed quite the get. An interview with a man once tasked with scrutinising the Defence Force in Westminster. Former Tory MP Tobias Elwood is the ex-chair of the House of Commons Defence Committee. He was also once the Veterans Affairs Minister. And here's what he had to say to Sally.
Well, good morning to you. It has been quite a day here, and the day's not out. We may see further resignations as well. I mean, firstly, tribute to John Healey. In British politics, maybe it's the same in Australia, you rarely see resignations on principle. Then people tend to just sort of weather the storm or, follow the crowd and so forth. John Healey's worked very hard behind the scenes to try and make a case, quite rightly, for more defence funding. It didn't come through. This was despite the Prime Minister going to the Munich Security Conference and making it very clear, yes, we're going to spend more on defence. And a year ago, we had a defence review, massive review, which highlighted just the types of threats that are heading our way, that we're going to be affected by, indeed are already, but also the massive holes in our capabilities as they currently stand. So now that the money isn't coming, then it's actually good to see that John Healey has taken this step. It's bad for government, there's no doubt about it. I think we're now seeing the dying embers of this particular government, and there will be a new prime minister. It's actually good for British defence and security, because it's shone a light for the British people to understand, better understand the true state of where things are at the moment and the fact we need to invest. And you can't really do that unless there is a nation behind the support for more spending. The reason why there's been limited spending is because people don't feel the pressure. Yes, the world feels dangerous, but out there, you know, Britain functions on a daily basis. But that isn't good enough given what is coming over the horizon.
The publication of the government's defence investment plan has been delayed amid reports of disagreement between defence and the Treasury. What is so controversial in this plan? What do we understand?
It's simply just too much. It's the numbers that you're talking about to advance our defence posture. And we're not just talking land, sea and air, those traditional domains, but space, for example. We need a new dedicated security satellite network, Skynet 6. It's still in its bubble wrap, waiting to be launched, because there's no money being signed off yet. Our nuclear deterrence needs to be advanced. We're working with you guys on that, but it costs money. Where is that money going to come from? And that's where the defence investment plan was supposed to be agreed, in fact, this week. In fact, it should have come out 8 months ago, but it was now rolled out to be this week. And that's what John Healey saw and decided the money is a good 10, 15 billion short of what's required. And having done all that work, he's decided to step back.
All of this happened while Australia's Defence Minister, Richard Marles, was scheduled to take part in an AUKUS event with John Healey. Where does this leave AUKUS if the spending is not there across the board?
So one thing I can do to assure Australians is that, I think similar to your system really, is we have an incredible civil service and military who are apolitical. So whilst there may be changes at the top of ministerial responsibilities, the work behind the scenes continues on, and that's very much the case. Britain is absolutely committed to AUKUS. I personally would like to see it expanded to include countries such as Canada and Japan. I think that's where we need to go with these massive, big platforms and sharing of intelligence and so forth. So I have absolutely every faith that these projects will continue to go ahead, even if there are changes in the ministerial makeup.
The House of Commons Defence Committee released its report on the AUKUS Pact in April, urging the British government to devote more money to the partnership. Is AUKUS going to be in some way affected by this, though?
I don't think it would have been. It would have been a priority within what funds were made available because it's so important. But it does highlight, again, the fact that there is this big debate in the UK as to how much to spend on defence. If you're going to increase your defence budget, where does it come from?
Former Tory MP Tobias Elwood there, the ex-chair of the House of Commons Defence Committee. He was also once the Veterans Affairs Minister. Well, we're going to end with a snippet of analysis from ANU political commentator Mark Kenny. Here is what he thought this all meant for AUKUS.
Well, it's just another one of these problems that seem to come up in this incredibly complex long-term project. I don't think it necessarily heralds any particular change, but it's another reputational hit, I suppose. It's a big reputational hit to Keir Starmer's leadership, of course. I think it's the sixth minister or seventh maybe now, because the junior minister has also quit as well. And this has happened, as you say, while our defence minister and foreign minister are there for those Osmin
standing
talks.
Standing at the aisle.
Yeah. Auckland talks or whatever it is. Yeah. So as I say, it's a bit of a mess and a bit embarrassing, and sort of left them sort of kicking gravel around on the driveway or whatever it is that they do when ministers suddenly dematerialise. But in the end, yeah, look, I don't think it changes much. The trouble with AUKUS, there's a lot of troubles with AUKUS, and there are many problems, I think, yet to be encountered. But the UK part of it is some way down the track. It's already, you know, behind schedule from what we understand. But I don't think this necessarily materially changes that. We'll just see what happens if there's a change of Prime Minister. That's the more significant thing, I think.
That is the ANU's Mark Kenny there. He also hosts the fabulous Democracy Sausage podcast. You can put that on your to-do list after you finish listening to this. But what he said there, that is where attention is kind of turning to this morning, whether these two resignations add to the list of names potentially set to challenge Keir Starmer for the top job. Al Carnes, the junior minister who also resigned this morning, gave an interview to the BBC before he announced his decision. And he was actually asked if he would throw his hat in the ring to challenge the PM.
So I've always been clear on this. My job is to steady the ship, look after armed forces that are serving right now on the ground, in the sea and in the air, and make sure that we are protecting this nation. But I've also been really clear that if someone fires a starting gun, I'm not scared of gunfire.
Hell of a soundbite, right? And quite the cliffhanger to leave the week on. Maybe even more names being added to the list of those wanting to challenge Keir Starmer. Well, thanks so much for listening to The Breakfast Wrap right across the week. All of those interviews from Sally Zara, produced by the brilliant Radio National Breakfast team. Our executive producer is Eleni Soltis, and Oscar Coleman produces The Breakfast Wrap. I'm Luke Sidham-Dundon. We'll see you Monday.